We're going to get started. Good morning, everyone. I'm Senator Penny Beebe Sender, and I'll be presiding over the public hearing, part of the public hearing today of the Joint Standing Committee of Criminal Justice and Public Safety. Purpose of the hearing is to invite testimony from members of the public regarding proposed legislation that is pending before this committee. The committee will hear testimony from persons present who wish to speak for, against, and neither for nor against the bills to be heard today. With leave of the chair, committee members may ask questions of any person testifying today. Other questions are not permitted. Whether or not you testify, you may submit written testimony to the committee. Please be mindful that testimony is public and is available to all once it is presented. Persons testifying at the public hearing, Senator Searway, is there a problem? Okay, good. Persons testifying at the public hearing today are advised that the hearing is live streamed and may be seen and heard by persons watching online and that a recording of the meeting will be archived. Would the committee now begin to introduce themselves? Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, everybody. Matthew McIntyre, House District 18, 16 towns. Today's shout out goes to Eastbrook.
Morning, I'm Representative Grayson Luckner. I represent House District 113, which is several neighborhoods in Portland.
Good morning, I'm Senator Scott Searway. I represent District 16, which covers Waterville, Oakland, Fairfield, Winslow, and nice little town of Albion.
Good morning, I'm Representative Bob Nutting. I represent the towns of Smithfield, Oakland, Mercer, Starks, and a portion of Sydney.
Representative Tavis Hassenfuss, House District 57, Reedfield and Winthrop.
Again, I'm Senator Penny Beebe Sender. I represent all of Knox County except for Idaho and the town of Washington.
Good morning, everybody. Nina Milliken, House District 16, most of the Blue Hill Peninsula and the town of Trenton.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Representative Michael LaJoy, and I represent District 96, which is part of Lewiston.
Good morning. I'm Representative Steve Bunker, District 75, representing Farmington and Chesterville.
Good morning. As stated before, I'm Tavis Hassenfuss. I'm the House Chair, and I'll be presiding over this public hearing. And at this point, I would like to open the public hearing on LD 1034, an act to decriminalize personal possession of therapeutic amounts of psilocybin for adults. Say that three times fast.
Okay. Good morning, Representative Hassenfuss, other honorable colleagues on the Committee on Criminal Justice and Public Safety. It's Grayson Luckner. I represent House District 113, which is part of Portland. And I'm here today to present LD 1034, an act to decriminalize personal possession of therapeutic amounts of psilocybin for adults. This bill represents a common sense shift in how we view plant medicine in Maine. Psilocybin mushrooms grow naturally in our forests and fields, just as they have for thousands of years. These aren't dangerous synthetic drugs. They're natural organisms that have been used medicinally by cultures around the world for millennia. What we're discussing today is simple. Should adults in Maine face criminal penalties for possessing a natural substance that many find helpful for their well-being? The answer should be no. This is particularly important for two groups who have found profound relief through psilocybin: our combat veterans struggling with PTSD and those facing terminal illness. These aren't recreational users. They're people who have tried everything else and found that this natural medicine helps where pharmaceuticals have routinely failed them. When someone is suffering at the end of their life, or a veteran is haunted by trauma, shouldn't they have every available option for their relief? The criminalization of drugs has been a failed experiment. It hasn't stopped use. It hasn't made anyone healthier, and it has wasted billions in taxpayer dollars. Meanwhile, we've watched as alcohol, a far more dangerous and addictive substance, remains legal and heavily marketed. This inconsistency makes no sense from a public health perspective. Let's talk about what LD 1034 wouldn't do. It would not create a recreational market or legalize the sale of psilocybin. nor would it create a bureaucratic system of regulation and a framework for therapeutic use. It would simply allow adults to possess small amounts of this naturally occurring compound for their own use in whatever way they deem fit. LD-1034 isn't about encouraging drug use. In fact, it has nothing to do with that. It's about recognizing that adults should have the freedom to make their own choices about what they put in their bodies, especially when it comes to natural medicines that grow right here in the ground in Maine. It's about moving away from punishment and toward healing. I urge you to support this bill. Let's stop treating Mainers like criminals for seeking relief and instead focus on education and responsible use. The war on drugs has failed. It's time for a new approach. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Nutting.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it currently illegal in Maine and federally?
Yes.
To possess these? Is I don't know a great deal about mushrooms, but is it available somehow, legally or illegally, as a powder, or is it the mushroom that you do something with?
Well, both. So thank you for that question, Representative. So it's a Schedule I substance federally, which means that it's really hard to conduct research on, but there are several institutions in the country that are conducting research on this compound with really so far promising results. Again, it's been around for thousands of years. It's been grown and used for centuries. So it's not something that's like new to science.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Searway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you mentioned about alcohol. Has alcohol ever been prescribed to be used for last effort medicine? I don't know if that's even been considered for that, but I don't know.
I don't know the answer to that, Senator.
I know you kind of mentioned it, but I know it's on the market, but I don't know if it's been used for medicine.
I think maybe it was much more common, in previous decades,
or something, right?
Yeah, something like that. But I'm not aware of, its prescription as far as terminal illness.
Thank you.
Representative McIntyre.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for your testimony this morning. You mentioned right there that a couple other states are doing research with potentially promising results. Are you able to bring any of that information with you during the work session?
For the work session, no problem. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. Representative Ardell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Luckner. Just a quick look at the National Institute of Health .gov's website indicates that, and I quote, microdosing psilocybin can lead to insomnia, increased anxiety and depression, poor mood, low energy, physical discomfort, e.g. gastrointestinal symptoms, headache, disrupted senses, temperature dysfunction, poor focus and cognitive functioning, and impaired social skills. It goes on to say that psilocybin is not safe for people with psychotic conditions like schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, or severe forms of bipolar disorder and borderline personality disorder. I think, how is this, with that in mind, how is this proposed legislation going to sort of jive with what the National Institute of Health is telling us about psilocybin as a substance, how dangerous it can be?
Sure. Well, thank you for bringing that up. I think everything that you cited there, the same could be said of alcohol, and we don't treat it as a criminal offense to possess. This is about allowing adults to make their own decisions primarily. And secondarily, I would also point out that, there are a lot of really successful people in high positions who do microdose routinely. I could name a few off. There's articles about it, but people who are high up in the Trump administration, people who are high up in technology and all over various sectors of the economy. So this is about people who I think have the adults who are able to make their own choices who want to have access to this compound.
Okay, so is it fair to say that this is not a medical use bill, but just a personal use bill to legalize it? I don't understand.
Well, it would just decriminalize, very simply. It doesn't legalize anything. It doesn't allow for a recreational market. It just says if an adult has a small amount of this compound, they can't face criminal charges for it.
So how would that ultimately jive with federal law where it's a Schedule I controlled substance? How would we sort of work with that?
Well, I think that's a great question, and we've dealt with that in other areas such as cannabis, where it still remains, you know, it's been scheduled down to a Schedule III substance recently, or schedule, I don't know the federal scheduling. But I think it's just one of these things where it's like, this is a naturally occurring compound that's been around for millennia. It occurs all over in nature. And it's just, why do we punish consenting adults who are looking for help in this manner, who have found help using this when other things fail? Why are we punishing them with a criminal penalty?
Hey, groovy. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any further questions, but Representative Luckner, I have a question. I'm just curious, why 1 ounce? Is there any particular scientific reason for that, or was that just an arbitrary number?
That's something I think that other experts could testify to. I think that would be a large amount for just a single dose, but maybe enough for somebody who, you know, is microdosing on a regular basis for personal use to consume. So that's a number I'm not married to. I don't, you know, I just sort of was looking and seeing what charges people are getting. And, you know, I thought that was an appropriate amount.
Thank you, Representative. And I don't see any further questions. So with that, we will invite up anybody who would like to speak in favor of this bill. And I'll just friendly remind everybody to sign their name and their organization with the sign-in sheet there for our records. Thank you.
What's that?
You also, whether you're for or against, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Hello, my name is Leonard Richards, and I'm for it. And once I get done signing this, I'd like to speak upon that in a minute. As you can see, I'm a veteran. I'm a Maine Army National Guard veteran. I deployed twice with the Maine Army National Guard, once with the 133rd. And if any of you know what happens with the 133rd, our chow hall blew up. I left that chow hall 3 minutes before it blew up. Okay, that's a little bit of my trauma. I deployed with the 133rd and I deployed with the 48th MP Company, where I experienced more trauma there. I also experienced trauma just in regular active duty, because by nature, they trauma bond you from the get-go at 18. They trauma bond you in the military. That's how it works. I'm divorced twice now over. I'm also retired from the Department of Veterans Affairs, where through them, I went down to the Boston Marathon bombing. Also through the Maine Army National Guard, I went to Hurricane Katrina. I am pro-psilocybin. It has helped me tremendously, tremendously help me and help others. What people fail to realize and what people here may not know, 22 veterans a day complete suicide. Let me repeat that. 22 veterans a day complete suicide. We've had over 15 Maine Army National Guard soldiers complete suicide, over 15 of them. And I knew some of them very, very closely. And I can tell you, whether you think it's anecdotal or not, I know if they would have had a chance legally to have mushrooms and to try them medicinally, it would have made a world of difference. I forget your name, but you ask about alcohol. Yeah, I tried alcohol. Sure, I drank. I wanted to drink my problems away. I wanted to forget them. I wanted to forget about the soldier that died in my arms. I didn't even know who they were. That didn't work. Just crammed it down. Right during my deployment, my mom died. I was on the Iran border. My mom died, had to come home. A week later, my dad was in the hospital, had a leg amputated. And I had to stay home for that. But I had to keep putting that trauma behind me because I had to be that good little soldier to keep going, to keep fighting, to be there for my family, which Sometimes I failed as a father. Sometimes I definitely failed as a husband. But I never failed as a soldier because we can't. Soldiers can't fail because if we fail, people die. Right? It's more acceptable to die by combat than to die by suicide. Why is that? Because we have a plant medicine that can save lives. We can change that 20 to a day. And to some people, it may not matter. But when you have somebody reaching out for help and they're told no, or they're getting all the help they can get and they still choose to take their lives, there's something wrong with that just because it's a plant that's been around for thousands of years. Personally, what it has done for me, it helped me and it helped me see my traumas and to work past them. I did the VA thing. Like I said, I retired from the VA. I had numerous jobs there. Psychologists and counselors, here, work on this book. Here, let's talk about this. There is a place for that. And there is a place for Western medicine as well. Absolutely. And to talk about what you asked about when you brought up the list, yeah, it's not for everybody. Just like Western medicine is not for everybody. You have people with you know, psychoses and things like that, where certain medicines aren't for them. It will make it worse. Absolutely. I'm not saying this is for everybody, but what I can tell you is you will see and would see a difference if it is legal, not legalized, but decriminalized. Like my traumas run deep. I don't have enough time to go over them. As you can tell, I'm shaken, but I'm here proudly representing veterans and proudly representing all the ones I deployed with here in Maine and the ones that didn't come back and the ones that did come back but chose not to live anymore. That is a burden that I don't carry because that was their choice, but I also know the ones that have helped themselves, right? It's being, as you, other, somebody else brought up, it's being used. I still use psilocybin mushrooms, and I will leave it at that. It is plant medicine, and it helps me. It has made me a better person. It has made me more empathetic to life in general, and has allowed me to understand myself better. No drug the VA ever gave me. Psilocybin is not a drug. It's a medicine. What the VA gives, that's drugs. At one point in time, I was on 5 medicines when I first got back from my first deployment. Take this, take this, take this. Okay. And I would take it and I would listen. I'd be that good little soldier and good vet and listen because I wanted to get better. I wanted to heal. What psilocybin allows us to do is allows us to heal ourselves in a way that unless you've tried it, you don't understand. To the deepest core, to the deepest part of who you are as a person, it allows you to see that. And I will pass the mic on because I'm getting really emotional here, but I hope you hear me that this 22 a day needs to stop. The soldiers, veteran suicides need to stop. It is too many. It won't stop everybody because it's not for everybody, but it's got to stop. And this bill would help that here in Maine. There's too many. I know soldiers now that are still contemplating suicide to this day. They work as police officers. They work as corrections officers. They work at different state facilities and federal facilities, McDonald's, still to this day, because there's no other avenue out there for them that actually helps. And that's the cold, hard truth coming from somebody that's in the trenches with the veterans and in the community dealing with all this. And thank you for your time, and I welcome any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. Are there any questions? Mr. Richards, I don't see any questions, but thank you. I take that back. Representative
I'm sorry. Last minute.
Yes,
sir. I just want to thank you for testifying the thank way you did. I know it took a lot of strength, and I appreciate what you've done. For the United States. So there's a number of us here that were in the service as well. And we can somewhat identify with some of the stuff you've been telling us. So thank you for coming in. Thank you.
Mr. Richards, thank you. And thank you for your service. And And thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Is there any? Okay, all right.
Good morning, Chairman and representatives. My name is CJ Spotswood. I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner. I've got about 25 years of psychiatric nursing experience. I'm an educator with various psychedelic organizations. I'm the author of the Microdosing Guidebook. I've also MAPS trained for MDMA when it becomes legal after doing a postgrad one-year program with the CIS Certificate in Psychedelic Therapies and Research. I'm for this. As I said, I'm also a researcher. I work with a company called Remap Therapeutics out of in New York. And we just actually published a study last year looking at an individual. Her name is Lynn. She's a retired federal JAG judge. She's a lieutenant colonel with the Air Force. And we published it in the Clinical Case Reports. She was an individual who had spent 20 plus years with chronic pain. She was living with a 7 out of 10 every day with chronic regional pain syndrome. The shooting pains would be so difficult that she had challenges even wearing pants many days. She'd done numerous treatments through the VA. She went through numerous surgeries, all that did not relieve that. As a result, she also had PTSD and treatment-resistant depression. Working with her and overseeing with REMAP, I'm the chief psychiatric clinician with the organization. And after a week retreat with her, she ended up going from a chronic pain of 7 out of 10 to 0. Last I spoke with her was about 2 weeks ago. We were looking at just short of 2 years with her, and her chronic pain, when her stress and anxiety shoots up, it goes up to a 0.5. That's 0.5, not to the 7. She's living her life in ways that she never expected. She's also off of all of her psychiatric medications. And during her retreat, she also detoxed from a Butrans patch that she was using for chronic pain as well. Another individual that actually I met with last night before I was aware of this is a woman named Catherine. She lives in Montreal. She's a therapist. And she's been living with chronic pain for the last 6-7 years. But in that, the last year has been worse after she was re-traumatized after a rafting accident. We did a one-week session with her. Amazingly enough, that her treatment resisted depression, and we ended up measuring that. That was part of what I did. It is at zero. Her depression is at zero. Her PTSD went from medium, high, severe down to zero. This is 1 month out, so we have not published on her case study yet. We have to wait at least 6 months before we do, and we plan to. One of the things that she had said to me last night, she said, I quote, "I'm so happy I discovered this at the age 39, this healing. And now I have time to live my life and not just surviving." On top of that, she also has a history of an eating disorder, which she has now gained 8 pounds. She's not on any medications that she's had before. Some of the medications were to help her stimulate her appetite and put on weight. Her chronic pain is now down to zero as well. And she says that she's feeling more mindful and present, meeting with her patients and clients, and being present with her family. As we're talking about, I know one of the questions was, where is this at with NIH and the federal government? Currently, psilocybin is being explored as a phase 3 treatment. So phase 3 is the final step before becoming a medication that's formally accepted by the FDA. As they're looking at that, we're hoping to see that come out within the next year or two. With one of the other questions that was asked was, with microdosing with 1 ounce, is that a lot? I know some of the side effects that Representative Ardell had mentioned was insomnia, increased agitation, anxiety, such symptoms such as that. I can tell you from working with many clients, microdosing, those are often side effects that we see that are dose dependent. And oftentimes when someone lowers their dose, it goes away. That 1 ounce does might seem like a significant amount, but if someone is microdosing, that runs out to being about 3 to 6 months worth of medicine, which is no different when I write a prescription for sertraline or any other antidepressant. Sertraline 50 milligrams daily times 90 days times 3 refills for a whole year. It is well within that amount. As is proposed as a decriminalization, this is not looking at for therapeutic use. This is looking at so people have access. With that, it becomes lowest priority for the police and law enforcement to end up prosecute for. This is not looking at someone who has large amounts or dealing drugs or distributing. This is for personal use, which will then people can have access to medicines that they don't otherwise have access to. I can tell you in my 25 years working with numerous patients, I have never seen improvements that Lynn or Catherine have on any standard medications that I have prescribed or worked with other people who have prescribed them. I know this is anecdotal of two people. These are two people who are off all of their medications and living their best life that they have never been able to do until they access this and stepping outside of accepted medicine. So I urge you to really explore this and be interested. I also have been speaking with decriminalization efforts in New York State. That's where I'm originally from. And last month, I ended up doing a talk with Officer Joe McKay, who is retired from the New York Police Department, who is also testifying and trying to make these things legal as well. So this is not something that is completely outside the norm. There's many other states that have been exploring it. And I think that if we wait until the federal government makes this a legal substance, many people are going to be lost as a result. As Officer Richards had just mentioned, 22 a day. We look at waiting for the federal government, which could be years. We could prevent a lot of loss here within Maine. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Representative Ardell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, sir. Just briefly, so if approved by the FDA, the substance would be medically controlled via prescription?
Correct.
Okay, and not just available to anybody willy-nilly, absolutely, you know, without a prescription.
Yes, and it would still cause a problem for people that want to microdose or other access. They would not be able to if it was FDA approved, because there would be no legal ways in place for people to obtain their medicine in small amounts. With the FDA, with approval, will be having similar to with MDMA, where it would be guided program with individuals sitting there. There's nowhere in there for the microdosing allotment. Oregon does have legislation in place to allow for microdosing, but with the FDA, it is not going to have this container available.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Nutting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. Are you aware of any convictions, either in Maine or New York, you mentioned, or
for
possession of this drug?
Yes, there is. I can tell you that one in particular, there was a nurse that was microdosing in Indiana who I actually testified for as well. She was convicted of having a large amount where she had grown. She was actually she was not convicted. She was tried for having distribution because the amount that she had grown was more than what it was. Through testimony with myself and other experts, it was and bring forth some of the research that's been conducted. She was not convicted for that. It was a misdemeanor. She was able to keep her license, and she is in the process of getting her license back at this moment.
This proposed legislation talks about 1 ounce. Mm-hmm. Is that an amount that you think is good or bad or indifferent?
I think it's a reasonable amount. If we look at, as I had mentioned, with microdosing, it's roughly 3 or 6 months worth of medicine. If we're looking at someone doing a potential high dose session, it would roughly be about 8 journeys for people. So if someone was to conduct like a group session, the facilitator that's leading that could have an amount to have 6 or 8 people in that with the amount that they have for a group session, which is fairly common for underground practitioners having groups like that to drive down costs and increase access to individuals. It is a relatively small amount for someone to have on them for possession. It's more than one personal use, but it's not an astronomical enough that it would end up being like someone going to a party and giving it to 100 people. Absolutely not.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Bunker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here. And also the veteran before you, I thank you for your testimony. It was very, very compelling. And I'm particularly touched by veterans who are challenged for adequate treatment for what they have gone through. And I'm encouraging more trials and studies to try to bring this or others forward for formalization. Here's my concern, and I'll pose this in the form of a question to you. I've heard the comments about it not being appropriate for everyone, as in most medications have a very prescribed manner in going in. My concern that I pose to you is around self-medication and for folks who might use this were it decriminalized, self-medicating outside of a medical practitioner's guidance. What is your response to self-medication outside of medical providers?
I'm within the medical establishment being a provider, but I staunchly am a supporter of outside use, underground use. I think that many of these substances lean to many ways of self-healing that within the medical establishment would not be available. Part of that year-long program I had worked with, there was a few individuals who were ministers within different denominations. There was therapists, social workers, stuff like that, who if someone was coming and looking at doing a large session, even if they were coming to me as a medical provider, they would be better served by under someone who can hold them if they have like a religious focus, religious belief. If when it comes to other use, when it comes to using these substances, there's a huge part, there's a saying of set and setting. We're having the proper mindset and a plan going into it and having ways to risk reduction if something goes sideways. There are organizations out there such as like the Fireside Project, which is like a crisis and counseling phone line for individuals to talk as a peer support, helping them through that session that's there. Similar to individuals who are going hiking, encourage people to go hiking on rough terrain, bad weather, et cetera, by themselves. I think that'd be better for someone to, if they're going to explore these options, have someone with them, a sober sitter, someone that they can reach out to, just like I would for other risky activities that are there. I think that if individuals are looking at doing this by themselves and go in with a proper mindset and have a plan, and starting with a low dose, working their way up so they know what they're kind of expecting. I've seen amazing outcomes for many, many people doing that.
Thank you.
Representative LaJoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On this committee, it seems that every day we struggle at what's right and what's supposed to be wrong. And we have to make a decision in regards to abusive use and medication use. And that's a hard decision to make. Because either way, if we do something, we could be challenged. I'm trying to understand and trying to look at a direction to go into. And I suppose it could be with the proper oversight of the individual using the product and not what I call free use, in other words, by themselves. And then possibly establishing, you know, a penalty on that. So I'm really perplexed in the sense that I've got to make some kind of decision here, and I'm hoping I'm going to make the right one. I can understand where you're coming from. I can understand that the product has been available for hundreds of years, as well as plant-based medication has been available for the same amount of time. Our ancestors used it, and so on. But it's just a difficult decision to make, and trying to reach a point where it's fair for both sides is sometimes not available, and we have to live with that. I guess that's my spiel right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative LaJoy. And I just remind everybody, let's try to elicit questions as best we can in the work session on this. Will be difficult, and I think we'll have a lot of conversation on how to figure out that right place to be. Representative Abdi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned New York. Is there any other state that's having this conversation about this drug?
Yes. New York State is having this conversation. Oregon and Colorado are also having this conversation. I believe at this point, I have not checked in the last couple of weeks, but there is at least 25 states looking at other options with this. This is not, there's a website that does the tracking. One of my close friends is actually a lobbyist in New York, and they have in the coming weeks, a full work session that they're looking at. But this is not a completely radical idea that other states haven't explored. I feel that, honestly, Maine, I don't want to say it's a social experiment, but I think that we could, if we can have access to something for individuals that are, we're already losing and dying for other reasons, we could, you know, be the benchmark to starting this change. I think that, you know, when we look at risk benefit, is there a risk? Absolutely. Can there be a benefit? Absolutely. I think that, you know, with the amount of people that we are losing daily to suicide, other substance uses, it is by making this, we can actually show that we want to make these improvements moving forward. But yes, there is at least 25, if not 30 states that have looked at other amendments and other ways to decriminalize or legalize specifically psilocybin.
Thank you. If my understanding is correct, it seems like physicians and nurses aren't prescribing these meds. So yeah. Would that mean that individuals are essentially seeking their own remedy, like Google, research and figuring out?
I mean, they already are. I can tell you that. Yeah. In my practice, I have had numerous patients who come in and go, hey, I've heard about this. What do you know? So they are looking for it. And that's where in my book, The Microdosing Guidebook, I talk about with providers how to have those conversations with people and how to have resources to learn more. And if anyone would like to have a copy of it, I could facilitate that for this work group or otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you for coming to testify today. And I do have a couple of questions before we let you go here. One is, you're licensed in what states?
For my nursing license?
Yes.
Maine.
Okay, in Maine. And
yeah, I do not have a New York anymore.
Okay. So with your Maine license, I presume that you can't prescribe this. So can you walk us through how that works with... and I really appreciate your you know, frank comments that it, you know, there's absolutely a risk here, and that you see that there's a benefit. But walk me through how this works, because I'd like to know what guardrails there are out there, and if there is a way to effectively put guardrails in place for this.
My work, excellent question, thank you. Kind of the workflow is. People have already decided they're going to do that. They come and ask questions. I don't know what they're ingesting. I'm not there for any of that, but I'm coming from a risk reduction and looking at their medications and saying, you know, talk with your provider about maybe these medications potentially being causing some side effects with it. Typically, it's not even a harmful one. It might block some of the effects that are there. You might end up not feeling the full effect of what you're trying to explore. It may block it, but it's not that I'm going in and treating them, and I'm going as a risk reduction of they're already planning to do that in similar ways to when I work with a patient who may have smoking, alcohol use, opioid use, you know, having the conversation of do this safely, try to minimize the amount that you're using, test your substances. There's the needle exchange, all those other good practices for risk reduction. So when I'm working with the company that I do the psychiatric assessments. I talk to them about potential interactions that they may have, mentally prepare them to the journey that they're having, kind of what to expect. I'm not actually treating them per se. They are as a consult and just answering questions and working with their providers that they may have already answered questions for them. And oftentimes those individuals, their providers have said, what we have tried has not been helpful. You have not had the outcomes that you've wanted. There's other options out there. But most of the time it's people who are just looking for answers, and I'm answering from a professional psychiatric background to answering those types of professional questions.
Representative McIntyre, you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony today. For the work session, what would be helpful to me is to produce some data that talks about, you've referred to the journey towards healing a few times.
Mm-hmm.
My concern would lie with, does this become a rest of the life journey, or is there healing and then titration? So I would like some data.
Can I answer part of that for you?
Sure.
With psilocybin specifically, it does have anti-addictive properties. Most people, and this has been also found with animals such as rats, when they have ingested, they do not want to go back into it. Most of the time, as I'd mentioned with Lynn, the retired, she came off of her opioid medications as a result and has had amazing results. There is not any long-term studies that have been published as of right now for psilocybin for how long it does help. The longest that's been done has been about 24 months with, and that's not with repeated use. That's the one use and seeing those mental health improvements 24 months out. What we look at with microdosing, sometimes that is a manner that is a shorter. Oftentimes people will do like a 6-8 weeks of this small amount, take a few weeks off, try it again, but it's not, and to clarify with microdosing, it's not an amount that is psychoactive. It is very similar to someone who is taking SSRI or antidepressant medications and going about their day, going to work and functioning without being altered mentally. So high dose, no, there's no addictive properties with it that's been seen. Microdose, some people do it a small amount longer term, but it does not an addictive piece to it. It does not activate the dopamine receptors that cause addiction.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time today. I do think it would be helpful for a work session if there's any peer-reviewed studies that you have or other medical literature on this topic. I think that would be helpful for the committee.
I can reach out with Representative Luckner and have conversations and bring forth with him.
Yeah. Thank you very much for your time today.
How would you like the printouts?
The printouts, you can give them to our committee clerk right here, who is just coming up.
Yeah, no, just one. Not referring to.
Thanks.
Oops. I'll wait till she hands.
Yes.
Just one page. One page per person.
Is there, were there 20 or 15?
Not 20. It's probably should have. Whatever. Not many go around. That's what I have. Thank you. I just found out about this. And there's a reason why there's not a bunch of others here that have been at other
sessions in regards to psilocybin because the leaders in the space, like myself, just found out about this less than 24 hours ago. So just saying, if we had more time in a working session, you'd have a line out the door. To start, collected about 100
yeah. Yes. And thank you for that. Yes. And I'll just remind you that. If you can just fill out your name and sure. your organization on that form. And additionally, anybody is welcome to submit testimony at any time, right up through and do the work session. And members can attend the work session and, you know, if called upon, can come to the podium to have discussions with us. But so anyways, thank you for your time.
Yes. Good to be here with you all. I'm a staff sergeant, combat veteran in the Marine Corps from 2003, 2011. I'm deeply passionate about this space. I've lived on the streets and have had a great deal of pain and suffering. The VA has diagnosed me years ago as 100% total and permanent because they recognize that SSRIs and talk therapy and everything they tried on me for a decade didn't work. So I'm one of those success stories, case studies, and I've dedicated my life since to help hundreds of people in the state of Maine have responsible access to this material, psilocybin. I don't provide, but I provide a harm reduction service. And so they access it, they find it, they grow it themselves, they get it from a source somewhere, one of their friends, and I talk them through how to do that safely. It's literally saved my life. I attribute it saving my life. Lenny's story as well, coming from a lot of pain and suffering. This material doesn't heal you. It helps you to see your trauma. It helps you to see what's going on inside and have accountability, agency to then do your own work. It's not a material that's just going to fix things. And all of a sudden, the things that are, I forget who was here because I was listening to it on the way, about the list of all the contraindications that could be going on, right? There was, you could have diarrhea and you could go have a schizo long break. Thank you. And that's possible. So is every single pharmaceutical drug on the market, right? If you listen to the advertisements, that's what they have. So if that's a reason to criminalize people, like what representative said here, just to pick a mushroom from the ground and potentially go to jail, I'm going to continue to do this for my life. Because it saved my life, I have a duty to, and I know I could go to jail because I'm accomplice being with someone. But to me, I'm a part of a coalition of other veterans called the Veterans Mental Health Leadership Coalition. I've testified with them to President Biden. I've been at the Opioid Response Council for the governor here in the state of Maine about getting state-funded research. That hasn't happened yet, but it has in four other states in the United States, Arizona, Ohio, Kentucky, a variety of others. Maine could be the next on the map. As you see here in my list, we have Oregon and Colorado are two states that have stepped up for decriminalization. It's not, again, to legalize and be a proponent for you. You're not having risk to say, we're not going to criminalize you. If you look in Oregon, there's a decrease in crime. If this is really about reducing crime, and that's your job here, it's to pay attention and listen to the evidence. Breakthrough therapies are a real thing, and the FDA has recognized that psilocybin, what you're looking at, and MDMA are the two most breakthrough therapies in history that has been ever found. Not any pharmaceutical drug or anything else, but it's what you're looking at right in front of you. And all we're asking for is just simply to not put people like me and the people I'm in service to helping to find some sense of relief, because nothing else works. And this isn't just anybody, but there's in Maine, I can almost guarantee there's probably somewhere around tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands. It's a guess, probably tens of thousands for sure that are already doing this, that you could throw in jail tomorrow. We're just asking to decriminalize. Very big difference. So if there's a confusion there, please get it straight. This is not legalizing, putting yourself at risk. It's decriminalizing, defunding, deprioritizing, just like we did in Portland, the city council with the mayor and those that were there. And we're asking the same thing here today. You did it. You're the 22nd city in the United States to be decriminalized. And this could be potentially the third. I know you're not making a decision today, but you could take this and go back and be an advocate and talk to your people, talk to me, talk to CJ and Lenny and all the others that are devoted to this for a very real reason. And we're happy to educate you and help you. With that, I think I've probably said enough. I have some other like data and material on there, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your time. And are there any questions from the committee? Representative Bunker.
Morning, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. I heard references from a number of the presenters before you that use the phrase microdosing.
Yes.
How does one determine what the appropriate dosage should be? And is there a point ever for individuals that they would be considered overdosing as far as how they're operating or behaving?
If you would say overdosing as microdosing turning into something we'd call maybe a macrodose or a larger dose, mm-hmm. and that's where we can move into the arena of maybe having hallucinogenic effects, having effects that are more than the norm. That's why harm reduction services, people like CJ or myself and the many others, like, that can help people to know what to do. And we do not have infrastructure in place. We do in other states that now have it legalized. It's kind of the first step is not legalization. Decrim is where then you can have spaces that are safe to talk about how to do that. And so one of the forms of knowing what to do with a microdose is 1 to 400 milligrams. That's the range of what's considered a microdose. Many people I work with, it's 100 or even below where we begin. And it's subperceptual. You can't even notice that something is happening. But internally, usually what happens, the first thing is you just have a decrease of mood. You're not anxious. That negative mind that's running, telling yourself that there's something wrong with you in the world, starts fading away. So that's what microdose does. And to answer your question, sir, if you move beyond that, many people that are like, say, end of life or retired or at home, they're advised not to drive their car and to, you know, operate with heavy machinery, but they might go to 500 milligrams. They might even go up to a gram if they choose to like use that themselves. And they know, I'm going to stay at home. I'm going to be with my wife. I'm going to sit at the campfire. And that sometimes is incredibly therapeutic and healing that they are taking care of themselves, just like taking a multivitamin in a way. But then if you take it more, you can take many microdoses and that becomes a macrodose, maybe 3 grams, 5 grams. And from that, sure, it would be dangerous if people are running around, picking up mushrooms from the ground and just gobbling them up. The way mushrooms are built is you cannot overdose, first off. You have to eat more than your body weight, which is nearly physically impossible to consume. And for microdosing, you have to stop on the weekends. You got to, if you take it Monday through Friday, if you keep on through the weekends, it stops working. It doesn't work that next, you know, it's, so you have to like get off of it for it to continue to recycle. It has this natural property for balancing, so you don't become dependent on it. I microdosed for well over 7 years and I've been off it for about 3. I don't need microdosing because I feel like I've found that stability myself. And that's what I advise for many other people. It's not a dependency. So there's an education curve that's necessary for sure, but that can't come into light unless the decrim can come about. You're welcome.
Representative LaJoy.
The statement was made that, well, New York, I guess, decriminalized it.
I'd miss that, sir.
They decriminalized it. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Not New York, Oregon, and Colorado. New York is Oregon.
Okay, so let's say Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Did they decriminalize a certain amount or decriminalize all use? In other words, larger amounts or anything? I guess because I think what we're looking here is to decriminalize a certain amount. Am I correct? And then whatever is in law at the moment would stay. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I don't see any further questions. So thank you very much, Mr. Adoni, for your time. And we welcome any other data that you'd like to submit to the committee.
Thank you.